dip your hands in glue and then dip your hands in broken glass because it's four-way combat on tonight's podcast for the week of July 1, 2014. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. We got an action-packed episode today because the transplant wars continue. And here with me are myself, John Gentile, features editor, and three bad dudes that each can hold their own in a rumble. With me is Tricky Ricky Frankel, who recently moved from San Francisco back to L.A. Ricky, how's the transfer treating you? Are you enjoying L.A.? Are you hanging out with all the famous rock stars? Are you doing lines and lines of cocaine? Drinking Cristal, hanging out with Pop Daddy. What's happening, Ricky, in L.A.?
You know what? It's nice because I don't have to drive 50 miles each way to go to a show. So I can just go over the hill to Hollywood, and I have the whiskey, the Roxy, and the El Rey. So it's been great.
Have you been banned from the Roxy as of yet?
No, not yet. But I'm sure they're one of the chiller places, so I'm sure it's not like, I'm sure it's probably hard to do that.
That's a crass reference, Ricky. That's a crass.
Oh, I apologize.
And also with us is reviews writer Greg Simpson. Greg Simpson recently moved from Bloomington to somewhere else in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. Greg, you know.
Midwest rules.
Greg,
Midwest.
Greg, where are you right now?
Lafayette, Indiana, Greg, which is where Purdue University is for people that like sports, maybe.
In Lafayette, you know, they got, you know, all the rock stars. They got all the hottest people. Are you doing the lines of the cocaine, drinking the Cristal, hanging out with Puff Daddy? How's it hanging out down in Lafayette?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing all that stuff. You know, like we were talking about before show, I'm just down with all that kind of hard shit.
Greg, how are you adjusting to the bigger city life in Purdue, named after a chicken?
It's only slightly bigger, actually.
So there's 7 people that live there?
Well, okay, so Bloomington is like 60,000. This is like 70,000. I don't know. Still both pretty tiny.
And are you enjoying it? Have you enjoyed it?
Yes. I am enjoying it so far. I am currently sitting in what will be my new recording studio. So I'm doing a lot of work down here. I painted one wall Weezer blue, and it looks pretty bitch, and I'm excited.
Well, fantastic, and also with us, speaking of a bitchin' dude, we've got managing editor Adam White, who has not moved recently because he's the Don of, not Grand Rapids, where do you live, Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls.
You thought.
Michigan?
There's some sort of big water name, so it's gotta be.
In Niagara Falls, if anybody wants to do anything, they always have to get Adam White's permission first. Somebody wants to buy a house, somebody wants to open up a business, you gotta get Adam White's permission. You know, you want to get a construction contract. Got to speak to Adam White first. Adam White, what's it like being the big wig over at Niagara Falls?
It is tiring. Although, from what I just ascertained from what Greg was saying, Greg, how many people live in wherever the hell you live now?
Like 70,000.
Yeah, we're 82. So I'm not from the smallest town on this show right now. This is new shit for me. it's like being the middle child. I don't really like. What can I say? I can't even make small town jokes. I don't feel like the dawn of anything at the moment.
And this is features editor John Gentile from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 1.6 million people. 1.6 million people represent.
That means you're nothing, John. You're nothing.
That's true. That's true. That's what my parents always said. And we got an exciting episode tonight. On tonight's podcast, we're going to be talking about Teenage Bottle Rocket, Iggy Pop, Gaslight Anthem, very divisive band these days. We're going to be talking about what happened with the other guys from Lost Prophets. We're going to be talking about The Dirty Nail, one of Adam White's most favorite newer bands. We're going to be talking Planes Mistaken for Stars, and of course, as always, at least one, but maybe more, of the Ramones. But before we get started, we have to continue the transplant wars. As the longtime listeners of the Punk News Podcast might know, about six months ago, we were talking about our top 2013 list, and we got an email from a reader, and the reader says, how come you didn't include the transplants on your best of 2013 list? And Adam White basically talked about how much he hated transplants for about a good 45 minutes. So that reader sent us an email back saying, listen, man, you need to give respect to the transplants. And I said, okay, I will give respect to the transplants. But Adam White and Ricky Frankel would not be having this. They both said they hated the transplants. They said they hated the transplants more than Taylor Swift, more than Iggy Azalea. You name it. They said they just couldn't stand the transplants. Well, it looks like that same reader has basically sent us an opus. His basically, I don't know how else to say this, but his declaration of independence regarding the transplants. This is an email from Mark. And Mark, I really do appreciate this. And I'm just going to – it's long, but bear with us, folks. It's a really good email, really well put together. And I'm just going to read the whole thing, and then you guys can react, because Mark is continuing the transplants wars. Here's what Mark has to say. Hello, Punk News Podcast. I got called out last week on episode 199 by managing editor Adam White and Ricky about my love for the album In a War Zone by the Transplants during their discussion about a tribute album being released for Rancid. I thought about not responding at all. But since you guys just can't seem to let this one go, I envisioned an extremely angry skinhead Rob picking me up by my collar and slamming me against the wall while screaming, "Don't you let them fucking play you!" Before I get into that, I just want to say I think the podcast is really great, and John G has been doing an A-plus job lately. Well, thank you, Mark. I don't understand why he gets haters. He reminds us all to think for ourselves. I think some of the reactions to his recent controversial stuff, personally, I don't think it was that controversial, were overblown and reflect a follow-the-group mentality that totally conflicts with the punk rock ethos of thinking for yourself. Keep kicking ass, John G. And you too, Mark. You too keep kicking ass.
I object to this whole email so far.
We're just getting started. Sorry if this email is a bit long. That's what happens when you call people out. You have to read long emails about it. I summarize my thoughts into four main points to keep this shit organized for you guys.
Oh my God.
Backstory. At the start of the year, I wrote an email to the Punk News Podcast about how I thought it was kind of whack that several site staff members listed Beyonce and Tegan and Sarah on their best of 2013 list. While In a War Zone, the banger after banger, take no prisoners, slash and burn, wrecking ball of an album by the Transplants, went without a single mention. I put on my punk police hat and waved my finger at Punk News for giving props to acts who are not even associated with the punk genre, i.e. Janelle Monáe, and I made it clear that Tim Armstrong, punk rock warlord, set things right within a war zone. Not only was this discussed for at least 20 minutes that particular week, but it's still been referenced a handful of times since then, and I'm still getting caught out for making such a declaration by staffers who probably still haven't even actually listened to the album. Section 1, Trapped in a Paradox. If Tim Armstrong puts out material in the style of Let's Go or Out Come the Wolves, it gets labeled as boring, predictable, and safe. However, if Tim Armstrong puts out material that is daring or drastically different than Let's Go or Out Comes the Wolves, it gets labeled as awful, horrible, and, oh my God, it's Skinhead Rob. Gonna keep shouting? Stop! So, if he takes the safe route, you hate it. And if he ventures in a different route, you hate that too. Section 2. You were 12. Okay, maybe 13. Out Come the Wolves was released in 1995. I was 12 at the time. I remember getting the album on cassette for my 13th birthday from a friend at my birthday party. I played it so many times that the ink on the tape started to fade. It was a gateway album for me, and I still champion it as one of the top five albums of all time. However, I was 13 at the time. At age 13, you aren't really your own person yet, and I would say I was a little young to be considered part of the core audience that would have liked Out Come the Wolves. I think about 80% of punks born between 1982 and 1986 kind of don't like admitting that. They seem to think that it's their album when it was really more their older brother's album. I was still too young to be really participating in the punk rock scene when that album came out. So, although it is a great album, it is not my album because I was still a child. So was my buddy, Adam White. Section 3. I went to go where the action is, not where it was. Building on that last point about eras, the Outcome the Wolves era is over, no matter how bad people want it back. Those songs have lost their sense of urgency live. They make up a perfect greatest hit set, but I prefer to see the artists perform the material they feel must be heard right now. I've seen Rancid live 4 times, and every time it was more or less predictable. Amazing, but I didn't really feel like it was getting... I didn't really feel like I was getting bit by something ferocious. However, when I saw the Transplants march out on stage in the middle of a bright, sunny day with the meanest, pissed-off frowns on their faces, followed by skinhead Rob screaming, "In a war zone!" so loud and so hard that his face turned purple, I felt a true sense of urgency. Travis Barker hit the kid with so much force, it was on. And when I saw Lars Fredriksson and the Bastards and Lars ran out on stage 2 seconds before the opening verse of the first song, again, I felt a sense of urgency. These songs had to be heard. This wasn't a greatest hits hit. This was not a greatest hits set for all the guys in Pennywise shirts who just want to fill out their checks box for I saw them on the list. Section 4. More relevant than ever. Considering that you guys filled a solid 10 minutes on the last podcast with a lively debate to the point of interrupting each other about Tim Armstrong and Rancid-related issues proves how relevant and important he is. The fact that I wrote an email 6 months ago about the Transplants in a war zone that is still referenced in conversation on the podcast to the point where I'm getting called out proves the point even further. If it were actually irrelevant or meaningless, it wouldn't even be discussed, or it would be a two-liner followed by no discussion. So that's it for now. I do enjoy typing emails about topics and bands. I will send you guys a review about the Montebello Rockfest next week, but I will make sure to start it off by talking about Devil's Brigade and the Interrupters, so you can get that Tim Armstrong vibe right from the get-go. Thanks. Signed, Mark. I don't know if you guys have any response to Mark's email. It says that he's saying, although perhaps we suggested the Transplants are irrelevant, the fact that we're still talking about them would argue that they're not still irrelevant.
I don't think they're irrelevant. I don't think they're irrelevant. I just don't like them. They're just not good. I saw them a year ago, and I just felt like I was getting, like, I felt the same way. I felt like I was just getting yelled at by a teacher the whole time. And Skinhead Rob just yelling at me. I'm like, dude, we get it. You have your tattoos and you just yell at people. And honestly, I don't like it. It's just like we get it. You know? They're relevant. I mean, reason why I was okay with seeing the Transplants that one time was because, one, they were opening for Rancid, and two, Travis Barker is an awesome drummer, and that's the only reason why I was okay with seeing them.
That's the only reason I would see him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to respond to this by ignoring everything that was in that email and instead picking up on, I think, the memory that Mark, the Transplants emailer guy, is from Ottawa. And if correct. So, is he?
He is, yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. See, look at that. Hey, anyway, so, hey, Mark, happy Canada Day, buddy.
Oh, yeah, Adam, happy Canada Day.
So, B, man, Ottawa has some cooking bands right now. You guys got the Steve Ademic band. They just had a record that came out on Dirt Nap that was really good. You, of course, had Crusades. They put out that awesome record on No Idea last year. You guys have the Ottawa Explosion Festival that just happened two, three weeks ago, that brings all sorts of, like, cool garage punk bands up there for a couple days, and it's something that we, like, criminally do not talk about enough in the punk news world. So, hey, go Ottawa. That's all I got.
Well, in honor of Mark, it seems as though, well, Ricky struck back pretty hard.
You know what? Listen, the guy's entitled to his opinion. That's fine. I mean, I remember I had to review that fucking awful what was that band with I'm already blanking on the name. Oh God,
was it a Rancid related band?
No. I mean, like, there were people that like.
I know, Shoot the Kids at School band.
That one, yeah. Not Leftover Crack, but
Endema or whatever they're called. Yeah.
Hang on a second. I'm gonna find them. But okay, that band. Like, there are people that like that band. I know people that like that band, and I want to throw up in my mouth, but you know what? And the same thing happens with this guy. This guy wants to listen to Transplants. It's awesome, but I just don't think, they're just not good. The rap rock thing is just over. It's been over for over a decade.
Well, I'll stick up for my homeboy, Mark, and I'll say, Mark, I've never seen the Transplants, but the latest Transplants album is the best one by far, and I could see how the Transplants could be good live. We actually interviewed Skinhead Rob about this album, I don't know, about 8 or 9 months ago, and he was a cool dude, so Transplants, you keep transplanting. And along those lines, we're going to keep the Tim Armstrong punk rock world conversation going, because the Interrupters, which is basically Tim Armstrong's backing band for his recent solo stuff, the Interrupters have announced a new album, and they've released the first single. The first single is called Family, which is actually a re-recording of a previous Tim Armstrong song, and the video's out. It's basically a ska number with Tim Armstrong and the Interrupters singing about how they like their family. Did you guys enjoy this video? Did you guys enjoy this track? Are you looking forward to the new Interrupters album?
You know what this really reminds me of? And I don't know if I've heard a lot of the Interrupters stuff outside of this. It really reminds me of the kind of track that would be, you know, one of those random, you never hear from them again bands that appeared on one of the first two Give 'Em the Boot comps, where all of a sudden it's just like, it's like a fun little, don't think about it too much, but it's pretty awesome while you're listening to it, ska number that, you know, that just crops out of nowhere and is like quasi-related to the Hellcat universe. I'm trying to think of like a few of the bands that fall into that category back from that old one.
Like the Phoenician Seven or something?
Yeah, that or like, who sang that? Bad Policeman, what was it called?
Isn't that like Buju Band and like Rancid or something?
No, it wasn't Buju and Rancid. Bad Policeman.
I really like on those old Give 'Em the Boot comps, I really like just the random, like, random bands on there, you know?
Yeah, and because you know that the bands
like
are probably
Box
like...
Or the Upbeat.
Yeah, well, like Skinnerbox was one of the bands that became Stubborn All-Stars. Like, that was one of King Django's bands. Like, that was like a band that you could go find other stuff from. But there are bands like, right, I'm looking at the first Give 'Em the Boot record. There was a band on there called The Upbeat that had this awesome little ska song called 17 at 17. I never heard anything about them outside of that. There was a band on there called, yeah, The Silencers that had a song called Policeman.
That's Rancid.
Yeah, well, like, it was probably, like, Rancid and Vic Gregario or something like that,
yeah,
right? But it
right.
was, like, there were all these, like, little, we're going to put together a bunch of the guys from the Hellcat world and record some fun little ska numbers feel to those first two Give 'Em the Boot records. And this feels a lot like that. So from that perspective, I can totally put on my, like, it's 1999 hat and be like, this is awesome. It's, you know, it doesn't necessarily hold up as very interesting songwriting or anything. It's basically the same rhyme over and over and over again. So, you know, I don't want to think too much about this from like a, you know, from a Greg Simpson musical academics standpoint or anything like that. But, but I had fun. So I'm going to go with that. And that was all positive about Tim Armstrong. So take that, nation's capital.
Yeah. I agree that, sorry, Ricky, go ahead.
Oh, okay. First of all, the band I was thinking of, that was Amir.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they were awful. But anyway.
I hate my parents. I hate everyone at school. I'm in Amir.
I hate all women.
I hate women.
It's one of the most sexist. Their merchandise, I would suggest you check it out if you haven't already.
The girl with Abercrombie and Fitch won't go out with me. Shoot up to school.
Oh, God. John, that's like a bad Cartman.
I don't even know how. What does that band have to do with whatever we're talking about?
I just couldn't think of their name. When I was going on my little Transplants rant.
Okay.
Anyways, this band, they actually opened. They were up first when I saw the Transplants for in Rancid. I just honestly like. I just kind of nothinged them. I was just like, eh. And this is the same thing. They did this song too. I'm sure Tim sees something in them, but I don't really. I'm not a huge fan. I don't mind them though.
Yeah, I'm pretty on. I'm pretty much in agreement with both you guys. But yeah, like Adam said, how it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's on. And you're like, yeah, okay, bob your head or whatever, but you'll probably never listen to it again. I mean, it seems a little bit like I don't know. It's a little bit trite, I guess you would say. Kind of, it's just so simple, and it's like, hey, this is a song for us to all drink and, you know, like put our arms around each other. It's like the Kumbaya of ska songs.
You know? Did you not watch that video and think, man, I want to be there?
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah. I wasn't looking at it like, ugh. I was like, yeah, this is pretty fun. But then, you know, afterwards, you're like, yeah, it's kind of cheap. I don't know. It's a, you know, oh, we got Tim Armstrong. It's a song. It's an easy sing-along. I mean, the lyrics are super easy. I mean, it's definitely a good lead single, I guess, for their whatever this is. Featuring Tim Armstrong.
I agree that it's kind of trite, but I don't think it is a great opening single. I mean, because it is so simple, and like it kind of wears itself out by the end of the song, you know? This really sounds more like a track 3 or 4 than a lead single to me, you know? I feel that, I mean, I enjoyed the poppiness, and I was enjoyed the fact that it wasn't scared to be ska or modern ska, whatever you want to say. But I feel like they could have put more work into the actual song.
Yeah, that's like how you feel. That's how I felt like with every song they played when I saw them. Like you just felt like they could have just done a little bit more to make them like just come off a little more like just different. And they wear those matching outfits on. On stage too, and I mean, I just felt like they were relying a little too much on a gimmick more than the music.
I don't know if I'd even call it a gimmick as far as ska bands go. I mean, the skinny tie thing, that goes way back. I mean,
oh, that's true.
But it's overplayed. I mean, as far as being like, oh, hey, we're the ska band that all wears slacks and a tie. I mean, it's not anything new.
No, but you know what? I would have had that criticism if this was like, I don't know, like 2001 or something, and we've just come off the third wave ska thing, and like, yeah, there's a lot of these bands still like floating around. But like, I'm thinking back to when we were going to ska shows right at the height of stuff, and you know, yeah, there are lots of bands that were like this, but I don't know, it makes me look at this band and it feels kind of like warmly nostalgic. Like, yeah. I remember getting on a bus and you know, filling a Coke bottle with rum and then going to some other city so that we could watch like some probably, you know, if you look back at it, really crappy ska band that was like, you know, someone's sister was in or something like that. And that's the only reason that we knew that they existed. But, you know, and then we took the bus back to where we came from. And that was like, that was a big event in our lives. And it was like a band like this with, you know, slacks and dress shirts and skinny ties and everything like that. And
I was in a band that wore ties.
Yeah. So I don't know. I see this now and it gives me, it fills me with warm ska kid feelings, which are clouding my music critic powers.
Yeah.
So I'm not being as mean as I probably should be, but that's okay.
Well, speaking of something that warms people's hearts, Teenage Bottle Rocket have signed to Rise Records. It's after a successful run on Fat Records. Teenage Bottle Rocket is probably one of the most popular bands at punknews.org, I would say. Here's what the band said. We are proud to announce that we've just signed to Rise Records and we'll be recording our first album this December in the Blasting Room, which, of course, is with Bill Stevenson. The label is home to many of our yada, yada, yada. Now I'm sure many of you are wondering how our relationship with Fat Records is, and the answer is awesome. They are some of our closest friends, and with their blessing, we've embarked on a new path. So are you guys excited for the Teenage Bottle Rocket album? Are you guys on the Teenage Bottle Rocket bandwagon? And further, does a band owe a label a certain loyalty, or can a band just say, well, I'm gonna go with this label now, I don't owe you anything?
It's gonna sound the same, so I mean, does anyone really care one way or the other?
I was actually kind of surprised by this. I'm not on the bandwagon, but yet I've seen them twice, but they I mean they seemed like such a Fat Records band that I wouldn't have assumed that they would ever change labels, like, ever.
I object to that.
Okay.
I have to defend that.
No, it's fine.
John, how does this lawyer shit work?
Generally, Adam, if you object on something, you have to have a basis for your objection. And the lawyer rules whether my basis are valid.
You got to follow that up.
Yeah, I will follow that up. Ricky, keep going, though. If you want it.
Adam just did a very significant, an advanced lawyer tactic. He objected knowing he was going to get overruled, but he put a block in the momentum Ricky was gaining to destroy his thought process. Well played.
Whoa. Judge Sean.
I was pretty much done, but I mean, I mean, yes. Weren't they always on? They were on Red Scare before or something like that, right? I mean, maybe I don't know why they would choose Rise though. It seemed like they were so at home on Fat.
Yeah, but I went to the Rise website. I can honestly say I don't own a single Rise release. I went to the website and was surprised to see that there were actually bands that I had heard of on there. That some of those older punk bands have kind of gone to that, whatever, gone there face to face, right? And Bouncing Souls, right? And Hot Water Music's last one. But then, like, looking at the, like, just the layout of the website and the art that's, like, scrolling by for other releases, I'm like, this does not scream Teenage Bottle Rocket to me. Now, granted, we are past the era of, like, you know, when Fat Records or Epitaph or Dill or whatever, I'm really dating myself, and Dill Records, where you could buy something from the Fat catalog and you would pretty much know that it was going to fit into this pretty, you know, this narrow-ish realm of punk, and if you like that kind of punk, you were gonna like it. So we're past that, where like labels really are defined by a certain sound. But like the Rise website, it just seems so off. It seemed like maybe Amir should be on this label, but Teenage Bottle Rockets, it just didn't seem to fit. Like the whole aesthetic seemed off.
Well, I think it represents Rise's power play. I mean, Rise started off like putting out a whole bunch of crappy music by like Amir type bands, and now they seem to be putting out very org core or even just like straight up punk releases, or I guess I would say American punk releases, not necessarily like anarcho stuff, more like fun punk releases. And I think they're just thinking that market is growing. And actually, I do think like the Teenage Bottle Rocket market surprisingly is growing a little bit, and I think Rise sees it. I think they're investing in it, hoping to capitalize on some of that market share. I think they're aiming towards the younger kids. I mean, I think Fat generally markets towards older people. I mean, not older people, but you know, like 22 to 30 people that were kind of around with when Fat was around 10 years ago. But I
people think, older than Ricky.
Yeah, people.
I'm 22, so I just make the cut.
But I
fuck you guys.
I think Rise is aiming towards like the 15 or 16 year old, which might be a smart move. All
right, there's so the people that have mommy and daddy's money. That's
what here's my read on this. Here's my read on this. So, and I come at this from a few angles here. So first of all, we've discussed Rise and like what kind of label Rise is. I forget where we had this discussion. It might have been even in person or something like that, but it might have been on this show at one point in the past. Rise really, you know, came up releasing a lot of that metalcore stuff that really falls outside of our universe, but is a huge market. It makes a ton of money. So the read on what kind of label Rise is, and this was the discussion that we all had back when Hot Water Music signed to them, because that was really the first time that a lot of us even started thinking about Rise as a label, you know, that has the capacity to do this kind of stuff, right? Our thought about it was that, you know what, the guys that own and run Rise, they're probably a little bit older. They're probably our age as far as, you know, the era of punk that they came up in.
I object. Speculation.
Okay. And and while they did, you know, basically, you know, to mix as many metaphors as they can, as they did really, like, you know, catch a hot wave at some point and start going and releasing things that were on this like very lucrative kind of metalcore feel, there's a lot of guys behind the scenes at this label that, despite the success in that, you know, this is where, maybe for nostalgic reasons or whatever else, this is where their heart lied. This is where the kind of punk that they liked grew up with. So now that they've kind of found themselves in this interesting position where they're a big label because of all those kind of emo metalcore, whatever you call them, bands that they had and still have, because why would you get rid of them, thinking about this from a financial perspective? But now they have the money to do other stuff. And so long as they're, you know, quote unquote good guys and can like connect with these bands and stuff like that, they've all of a sudden made themselves into a viable option where, you know, bands like Hot Water Music or the Bouncing Souls or anything like that can go on there. And they've started signing up bands that kind of fall into that same demo, Only Crime, 7 Seconds, things like that. So they're a label now that actually looks a lot like Epitaph, but it's like they came at it from the other side. Epitaph started releasing all this stuff that we're going to call orgcore, and then they, you know, as the money was there, as they needed the money and that stuff stopped making the money that it was making, started signing all this stuff that appeals to the young kids. Rise is kind of the opposite in that they were signing stuff that appeals to all the young kids in the first place, but then had the money to go and to pick up some of these, let's say, more classic bands and bring them in. So I think it's very interesting. I think Rise doesn't have a sound in that perspective. They're you know, it's fairly vanilla as far as a label goes. I've got to assume that they're offering these bands something pretty nice to actually pull them in, because I don't think that if you're, you know, if you're any of those bands, you don't get anything from being on Rise. The young bands do. So if I'm just going to look at some of these young bands' names because I've never heard of them. If you're Restoring Force or Rise of a Lion or something like that, right?
you won't let me go to the mall alone. But
Rise means something to your demographic then. So for them to be on Rise is a big deal because they can get other Rise fans in on the mix. If you're the Bouncing Souls or Only Crime or something like that, the Rise kids probably look at you and go like, what is this old man music and why is it on my label? So those are really the aberrations here. So I think that's really super interesting for there. You also got to look at the size here. So Rise is a big label. I'm going to say that they're probably as big as Epitaph at this point, if not bigger. They sell a huge amount of stuff. Fat is a big label in that it has a really consistent brand that means a lot to us. But I don't think Fat is really that big of a label these days. It's not as big of an operation as Epitaph and by any means, and it's certainly not as big of an operation as Rise. So as far as reach, as far as, you know, how much money they can throw at a band, as far as, you know, what extra promotional bullshit that they can afford, Rise can afford more than Fat. Fat, we always go, you know, it's Epifat, we always say that, but that doesn't mean those two things are equivalent. Fat's really more of a mom and pop kind of thing compared to Epitaph and Rise and stuff that are more corporate. So those are two different sides of things. So going from Fat to Rise is a step up as far as the financial end of all this stuff works. So it's not just like a weird sidestep the Teenage Bottle Rocket is taking. So, but where I jumped in earlier and I was saying that I kind of like object that Teenage Bottle Rocket is a fat, you know, has a fat sound, that's a super recent way of looking at it. Like Teenage Bottle Rocket in a lot of ways helped usher in this fat sound that are really what has become the modern day fat sound. But really all that kind of started with them signing bands like the Soviets and the Epoxies. And when Fat signed those bands, they're basically picking up bands that were, you know, used to be dirt nap bands, used to be bands from like the garage punk side of things. That was weird. That was completely atypical of a band that would be on Fat, that they would have that kind of sound. And Teenage Bottle Rocket, when they first got on board, they kind of fit into that kind of like, this is this weird Ramonesy garagey thing that Fat's doing now, but it still wasn't typical of Fat. They've had such success and people love them so much that now sort of is, you know, you would never have Fat signing Masked Intruder or Nightbirds if you would not have Fat signing Teenage Bottle Rocket. But that's, I don't know, to me that they were never, them being on Fat was always kind of interesting to me. It was always kind of like, huh, all right, I guess that's cool. I like Fat. I like Teenage Bottle Rocket. It's cool that they're working together. But I disagree that they are like, they're the fat sound kind of thing. Like they don't sound like Lagwagon.
It's too bad that Lookout shit the bed because they are a Lookout band.
Yes,
is what they
exactly
are.
And a lot of these bands that we're talking about are completely Lookout sound style bands.
Well, speaking of,
yeah, I stand corrected.
Objection sustained, Adam. Objection sustained. Speaking of Orgcore, this is big news. Gaslight Anthem have announced their new album, but not only that, they've released the very first single. It's called Rollin' and Tumblin'. The album's out August 19 via Island Records off the album Get Hurt. Did you guys check out this single? What were you guys thinking? Was it what you had hoped it would be? Are you guys down with the Gaslight Anthem, the GA?
I wish it sounded more like the way you just said the title. Can you say it again for me?
Rollin' and Tumblin'.
Yeah.
With the Gaslight Anthem. We love our country music down here in the GA. Got a new album out called Get Hurt. Got a heart on the cover, but the heart's upside down. That means we're sad, you see. Some people say it looks like a butt, but I don't disagree. We like butts, too. You see, the butt is a metaphor. It's both something people chase after, but it also releases excrement. It's a real we borrows, if you will. That's a Greek word, in case you don't know ancient Greek language. So be sure to buy our new album, Get Hurt, on August 9th, signing via Island Records. It'll be us, Justin Bieber, and Backstreet Boys on August 9th, signing. We'll see you there. Yeehaw!
Oh, man. I almost wish they did go a little bit more country. That would be... Dude, I think you need to go on tour with them and announce them before each gig, because that was fantastic. I'll tell you. I know they're from New Jersey, but the Stones were from, you know, they were from the UK, and they still pretended like they were hillbillies, to, you know, into the 70s. I think Gaslight could do the same thing. Worked pretty well for them. Oh, man. But actually, the song itself, I do wish it sounded more like what you described, because it was just more of the same. You know, it had, like, with their last, with Handwritten, they started putting in these stupid, like, riffs. Like, I've never thought of them as a band that played riffs. You know, it was more just like, oh, we're playing a bunch of open chord punk rock. And, you know, then they had their lyrical thing. That was kind of their thing, their aesthetic, nostalgic imagery and whatnot. But now they've started putting in, like the intro to the song, it has this riff that's like, it's not like exactly hard rock, but it's kind of a little more in a hard rock vein than I would like to hear from them. The song does get better towards the chorus, but then it just kind of sounds like more of the same Springsteen-y stuff. And I'm not too crazy about the direction his voice is headed either. It's sounding less interesting to me, I guess. Don't really know what else to say.
I agree with you there. I mean, I think I never could really get into this band, but I think once, like, I think like Bruce Springsteen really took them under his wing for a while, and I just kind of find it boring too. And this track is not excluded from that claim. So I don't know. It seems like it's just more of the same to me too.
Justin Bieber. I just want some more of that. just do that, and then we'll move on to the next story. Come on, John. For me.
you guys can have a private call after we're done the show. Go as long as you'd like. So anyways, I have no opinion on this. I didn't do my homework before this show. I was trying not to die. So let's jump to the next one here.
Well, speaking of Adam trying not to die, let's play a track by a band that talks about that very topic. This is a band that reached out to me. The band's called Death Through the Dog. I kind of think maybe they could change their name, but their music's pretty cool. It's kind of a combination of Dead Boys, Stooges, and a little bit of goth, and even a little bit of emo creeps in there. Very unusual mix. Pretty cool. This is the first track off their new EP. The EP is called Talking to the TV. This track is called Flies. The band is called Deathly the Dog, and you can get this music for free at their Bandcamp, deathlythedog.bandcamp.com.
After all, but don't wait around.
And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. We're running kind of long in tonight's podcast. So Adam White, kick us off with this next story. Keep it firing.
All right, we talking about Iggy?
Well, if we want, I figure we're running a little long. I mean, we can do it if we want, though.
Well, what are we talking about? What do you want me to kick you off with here?
Let's talk about Jeff Rickley of Thursday and members of Lost Prophets.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Lost Prophets, one of my favorite bands.
Oh, the joke's over. Okay, so with the incarceration of lead singer Ian Watkins, and we've talked about that in the show quite a bit, the remaining members of the UK, I believe, right? They're from the UK, yeah. From the UK band Lost Prophets, have formed a new band. The band is called No Devotion, and it features Jeff Rickley of Thursday on vocals. So the band has released their debut single, Stay, and you can find a link to that on Punk News, or you can find it on YouTube. And they're expected to release a physical single of that on July 22nd via Collect Records. So this is a new band that features a fairly well-known punk, well-known frontman, if you're of a certain generation in the punk world, and the members of the, I don't know if we want to say unfairly or not, but the much storied Lost Prophets. So you guys give this a listen?
Yeah, I did. Honestly, like for the first like 10 seconds, it sounded exactly like halfway between The Cure and New Order. And I was like, oh man, do I actually like Thursday? Like, is this going to be good? And then it wasn't. It was really bad. Like the lyrics, I'm not trying to be, I'm getting on the hate train on this one. I don't feel bad about it either. The lyrics sound exactly like Bryan Adams in the 80s. Like if you put this on adult contemporary throwback, like people would say, oh yeah, Bryan Adams with The Cure. Like that's what this sounds like. This is not good. And I mean, I'm not saying what is and what is not punk, but there's nothing dangerous about this. There's nothing. I mean, it's a little experimental because it is sort of a Cure throwback. Nothing dangerous. There's nothing edgy. There's nothing intense about this. It's just, I mean, it's Bryan Adams music. Not Ryan Adams, Bryan Adams. So I thought it was weak, man. And honestly, I mean, I don't want to say I feel bad for the – I'll say I feel bad for the guys in Lost Prophets, assuming they didn't know their bandmate was doing those horrible things, which is possible that they didn't know. Then, man, I mean, that guy really, like, I guess they want to stay together because they're all pals, but the stink of what their bandmate has done is just forever glued to them. I don't think there's any getting around it. And this weak track is not helping. So I thought this track was bland and boring.
I don't think a new name is going to help anything. They're always going to be weren't they that band that had that really messed up, you know, lead singer that's now in jail forever? Like I don't see how they're always gonna have that aura and the guy ruined everything. Let's just put it to that.
So here's a question: could they completely turn this around and just own it and stay Lost Prophets, but like call their next album like, you know, Fuck Ian Watkins?
Yes.
Could they do that?
Yes.
Like, is that one way that you could possibly come out of this?
That would be a bold move. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean. They could.
I don't know.
Dude, I don't know what the Lost Prophets. I don't know what the Lost Prophets sound like at all. Do they sound anything like this? Are they electronic or what are they like?
They're like.
No one on the show knows that.
I think Ricky knows.
I checked it out before we because I was on that show where we talked about Ian Watkins and I wanted to hear what they like. They're like, I want to say, and I might get this wrong, but I think they sounded like something kind of like The Cure with like a little bit of like that metalcore stuff that Epitaph has been signing lately. But it was just, I was just disturbed and I just turned it off. Mm-hmm. It was just awful. At least I thought so.
Yeah, I wasn't horribly offended by this No Devotion song as John was.
I was, man. I mean, honestly, like, I thought. Like,
I could tell.
like, I'm listening to this. I'm like, isn't this, like, the exact thing punk rock is supposed to be against? Like, mid-tempo balladry?
You sound like Greg Moore on every episode of Two Gregs, One Podcast. It's pretty funny. He really ragged on the Lawrence Arms. It was hilarious. But that's the argument that he gives for anything that, I don't know, that doesn't sound absolutely bizarre. And this, it is safe for sure. I think it's downright pleasant at times. And you're right. Maybe that's, you know, is this punk? I'd say it's not. But I could see how this would have a draw. It's got just enough of that, like, nostalgic thing, like the 80s thing that you guys are talking about. It's got 80s nostalgia. It's got the turn of the century nostalgia with the guy from Thursday in it. So kind of a new combination of those kind of things. I could see, you know, them doing all right, considering they get past the Lost Prophets thing. that whole unpleasantness, so to say.
Well, they never fully will, though.
Probably not.
Do you think they have like a group meeting and they're like, let us speak of the unpleasantness? Anyway, speaking of turning back to happier news and Fat Records striking back, this one is right up Adam White's alley. And I know Adam is going to talk about this. The Dirty Nil, Canada's own The Dirty Nil, are going to release a 7-inch single on Fat Records. It's going to be called Cinnamon, backed by Guided by Vices. And it's going to be out August 19 on Fat Records. And the band's also on a July tour covering most of the United States. Not quite the East Coast, but everywhere else. Adam, are you excited for the new Dirty Nil 7-inch? And do you think this forecasts perhaps a Dirty Nil album on Fat Records?
I have very conflicted, you know, those feelings where, like, it's a band that's, like, local-ish and you know them and now the rest of the world's going to know them and you sort of hate that.
You're too old.
You just
want to
keep
stuff,
them
man.
For yourself. Yeah, so this is really interesting. I mean, there was a Reddit AMA Ask Me Anything thread that Fat Mike did not too long ago, and he mentioned his love of the Dirty Nil, and I forget which of their songs that he had heard, but he was really into it. So that became this weird kind of online, you know, they should reach out to me, hint, hint, kind of thing that he was doing. This is really neat for them. There's a part of me being like a really close to the local scene where this is coming from person that is looking at this and going, Cinnamon is from 2012 and it appeared on a comp that you could have only got at the door of a certain bar in a small town down the street from here. So I guess for the rest of the world, it is a new song. But every time I see it, I've seen an article this week from something like Noisy or something like that, where they're like, listen to the Dirty Nil's new single. I'm like, what? Come on, that song has 5 million plays in my iTunes right now. I don't know how it's new. But actually, I've been having that kind of like, I'm too close to this reaction as it's been going on. But it's really neat. Whether it portends an actual album on Fat or not is going to be interesting, because this is a band that, like, when they've been interviewed, they've really talked about the fact, like, they've been pretty much strictly like a vinyl and or cassette band up until this point. The biggest thing that they've released was they had a 10-inch that came out, which was like a 5-song 10-inch called Smite earlier this year, that was really like the biggest collection of songs in a single package that they put out. But these are guys that, you know, they're huge vinyl nerds. They're, you know, they would be quite happy, I think, just releasing 7-inches multiple times a year, you know, year on year. And it seems that's what they've been doing. And when they've been asked about full lengths in the past, they've said, like, you know, we're sure we'll eventually get there, but we don't want to just, you know, just do it because you should. Like, they want to do it because they actually have like a compelling group of songs where it makes sense to have them all collected like that. So whether they fall into the more traditional band pattern now and start, you know, releasing, you know, 12 song blobs on Fat every year and a half, I don't know. It's really curious. But hey, I love the Dirty Nil. I love Fat. Seeing them together like this makes me all sorts of giddy. So yeah, I'm really stoked about this. I've played them on this podcast like 36 times, so I am going to officially take some credit for this.
Adam, might I add, nice use of the word portends. Well done.
Thank you. I am a lawyer.
Hey, Adam, have you heard the song Guided by Vices?
I have not heard Guided by Vices.
I like the title.
I like I like Guided by Voices, so I'm like, hey.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I've heard this band in one of the podcasts that you played them on, but other than that, I can't really say that I have heard
this. They're like a really loud three-piece garage rock band. There's you know, big kind of like fun. I want to say that almost reminds me of like Blue Album Weezer like guitar riffiness to it.
Sold.
In that they're, you know, where there's, you know, kind of like a little bit of a wink where they're like, we're going to do a big fucking riff in this song because woo, that kind of thing's happening. And yeah, they're good. You should listen to Smite. Smite is streaming online. It's good. But this is one of these bands that, like, if I have to drive for like 30 minutes in any given direction and it's a nice day, I have this playlist on my phone. And it's probably like the only music that's actually on my phone these days that just shuffles through the, you know, one dozen songs that they have that exist, because they all make me happy, and I'll just, like, you know, roll down the windows and drive around and listen to it really loud. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of this band. So this is great news. I was super stoked to see that, like, Punk News posted a Dirty Nil story and I didn't write it. So I'm like, oh no, it's a new era. I have no control over this now. This sold me for sure. Good Adam news. I like the Nil. The world will like the Nil. Their bass player has a great mustache. So
yeah, I noticed that. You also were first comment on the story, which I can't remember the last time I've seen Adam White be first comment on a story. care enough about to comment.
It was the first link on Punk News I've clicked in like 3 months. Yes. That's not true.
Well, speaking of people being excited about stuff, Planes Mistaken for Stars have announced a new tour. And on top of that, they say they're going to work on a new LP following the tour, which caught a lot of people by surprise. It's just it's about a 3 week long tour hitting up, or 2 week long tour hitting up the USA, running from the West Coast down to Midwest, no East Coast again. A lot of people were very excited for this. A lot of people are very into this band. I don't know if you guys are into this band or not, but are you guys excited for Planes Mistaken for Stars putting out a new release? Or is this just something the kids are into, but you guys are not? Query.
I'm actually really into this. This is not the type of band that I think I listen to, but at some point during the, I don't know, the early to mid 2000s or something like that, I think it was they had a single out in 2002 called Spearheading the Sin Movement, and there was a record that came out either right before or right after that called Fuck with Fire. And the one after that, which called Up in Them Guts. Like, between those three things, I was really into it, but not in the way that I'm into most other bands. I mean, like, Planes is a dense band. There's a lot of just noise and rumbling and, like, very muffled, dirty vocals going on. And it's not the kind of thing where, at least for me, that I'm picking out lyrics or riffs or anything that hooks me, but it's the kind of band that I can turn it on and I just kind of like there just being this, like, noise wall coming from it. It's like, I don't know, there's a little bit of a, I almost appreciate it on, like, a, even though it doesn't sound like this at all, on like a shoegazy, like My Bloody Valentine-ish kind of level. I listen to this, like, yeah, you know, people don't listen to, like, Loveless because they're trying to pick out lyrics or anything like that. They're listening to it because it sounds like Loveless. This is that kind of thing where, like, I like listening to Planes because it's just like a big angry racket is happening, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't tell you one note or one word of anything that they've actually done, but I think that's okay. It's not that kind of band. So I'm interested in this. I like Planes.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying about the shoegaze thing. It's just that kind of, like, all enveloping kind of noise.
You're not so much listening to it because, from, like, a songwriting perspective, you're listening to it from, like, a, I don't want to say a production perspective, really, but maybe, you know what I mean? Like, from a composition perspective.
Yeah, it's like the way everything kind of weaves together. It's not relying on one single element to stand up. It's just, like, the way that everything kind of just smashes together. And I mean, I can't say I'm a super fan of this band, but again, it's one of those things. That's the hard thing about shoegaze and, like, My Bloody Valentine. A lot of people don't understand that either, where, like, you really have to listen to it a lot to understand, like, oh yeah, okay, I'm not supposed to be listening to this really in the same way as, you know, something else. And so I do remember liking this band a lot when I'd hear them, but I can't say I went back to their records a ton. I will definitely give this new one a shot, though.
I don't want to sound over enthusiastic. I mean, I think you and I are pretty much on the same boat here, but, like, that's kind of the level at which I interact with this band. Is it's one of those, like, you know, I'm putting it on because it's creating a mood.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Well, speaking of bands that are the exact opposite of shoegaze, they're doing the 10th anniversary for the Johnny Ramone Memorial Tribute. It's being basically spearheaded by Rob Zombie on August 24 at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And what's going to happen is they're going to show Rob Zombie's movie, The Devil's Rejects. Also, there's going to be a band including Rob Zombie, Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, and the early punk scene, as well as Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols, and they're all going to be playing a Ramones cover set. Also, Kirk Hammett will be displaying his collection of horror movie posters for everyone to see. Johnny Ramone passed away on September 15, 2004. Let's throw this one out to Ricky. Ricky, is this too much Rob Zombie or just enough?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at that lineup for the Ramones cover set, and I don't think this is going to sound good.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You have one punk rock guy in that like cover band. You have, and then you have Rob Zombie, who's more metal. I just think this could end up being just a mess. You know,
I hope someone films it.
I would love to see that. Yeah, I would love to see it. I just don't think. Why does Rob Zombie need to do Ramones covers?
Well, but I guess the explanation is he was good friends with Johnny Ramone, and he actually curated that We're a Happy Family covers comp. But I like, what does Rob Zombie's movie have to do with Johnny Ramone? You know,
well, also, and then like Kirk, you know, then Kirk Hammett is like displaying his horror movie poster thing. Did Johnny Ramone really like horror movies?
He actually did. He actually had one of the most extensive collections of vintage 50s horror movies posters.
Okay.
Guess that makes a little bit more sense then.
But I mean, like Rob Zombie's movie, why not just show like a Ramones concert? Like,
no, they should show Rock and Roll High School.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, I agree. I don't think the band will actually sound that bad. I mean, it's pretty hard if you get a bunch of like, you know, competent rock musicians in a room to not fuck up a Ramones cover. Like, it's, you know, it's a pretty straightforward thing to do. So as long as you're not trying to, you know, put your own signature style on it or anything like that, and you're just playing it straight, then I'm sure it'll sound fine. But yeah, to me, the most egregious part of this is the movie. Like, they could, that's what pushes it over the Rob Zombie threshold for me. It's like, you don't need to do the movie. You could do something else. I mean, unless this whole thing is supposed to be themed as being like a big horror thing, then I don't know. Even so, why brand it with Johnny, right?
Maybe was Devil's Reject like maybe his favorite movie? When did that movie come out? I'm looking right now. 2000. It came out after he died.
Johnny Ramone did not approve this movie. He couldn't have.
Objection here on Adam. I gotta tell you, I really think with this lineup, I think they could overdo it and ruin a Ramone song. Ramone, yeah.
I agree. You could try too hard. Something about it's you gotta have the feeling. It's all about feeling with this kind of punk rock.
And
I don't know. And if you've been in Guns N' Roses for any length of time, I'm sure your feeling is totally numbed by all the cocaine and hookers.
The Ramones were going against the Guns N' Roses kind of sound when they were around. So I because they were all, you know, those 20-minute guitar solos or whatever. Ramones are just cut down, just in your face punk rock that doesn't have any like, you know, guitar effects or anything like that, and it's not overdone. It's just bare minimum, and I don't see this working out well at all.
All right. It may look awkward more than it sounds awkward, so that's what I'm hoping for videotape.
Yes.
It's just going to look weird.
Closing word, I'll ask each of you, who would be part of your dream Ramones cover set? Adam White?
Okay, dream Ramones cover set.
So like a member of another famous band?
Well, like four members of any four bands. All start. On vocals, you got to have Black Dahlia. He's a Ramones fan. Great singer, great vocalist. On guitar, let's see, on drums, you have to have either Robo of Black Flag, or I'm trying to think who else is a great, or no, Jonah Falco of F'd Up. Great drummer, and he has respect for the old school stuff. Also on vocals, Keith Morris, because Keith Morris has done a Ramones cover, and it was awesome. On guitar, I would have, let's see here, on guitar, I would have, oh, I know, Cheetah Chrome of the Dead Boys. That'd be fantastic. And on bass, I would have I would say, oh, Jerry Only of the Misfits. Even though Jerry Only gets a lot of hate these days, like he did have a lot of Ramones connections, and like even though a lot of people don't like his singing or whatever, Jerry Only really is a great bassist. So I would definitely put him on bass for my Dream Ramones cover set. And actually, I would even say maybe even Marky Ramone on drums. I don't know if that's cheating or not.
That's cheating.
All right, not Marky Ramone. Jonah Falco, effed up. So Black Dying, Keith Morris, Sharon vocals, on bass, Jerry Only, on guitar, Cheetah Chrome and the Dead Boys, and on drums, Jonah Falco.
I need way more thought to answer this.
I can sit here and process this
for a while, but it's not going to be very interesting to people, so I'm just going to leave them with yours. Although I will definitely come back with this if this is like homework.
All right, I'll tell you what. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Email us your Dream Ramones cover band, and we'll read them on the air. I think this is pretty cool. Meanwhile, you three think about it. Has anybody got any tunes to play for tonight as we close out tonight's podcast? Adam, what, you got a tune for us?
We need another song, don't we? Okay, here, let me pull something out of the list of things.
He's gonna play.
I can pull songs out of
Dirty Nil.
I know, I just should. Here's the songs I already played before. No, hold on. I'm going to find something here. What should we...
I hope it's rootin' tootin', Adam.
Well, it is Canada Day, so I feel that I should go obnoxiously Canadian for this.
Weaker than.
Okay. You could do Guar doing O Canada.
So Weaker Than's would be, to me, like more stereotypical than I'm shooting for.
Come on, John. He loves them.
Pop.
We played Pop a bunch.
DOA. DOA. I saw DOA live like 4 months ago. If you get a chance, you should see DOA live. They still kick ass. Like, they really do kick ass live.
I saw them a year ago.
Oh, they kick ass? Like, I mean, yeah. they were DOA. They didn't do anything like radically different, but they kicked ass though. Right? Like Ramon style. Just bat, 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 bat.
Adam, just play the Constantines. I know you've been listening to them nonstop since you found out that they're reuniting for shows.
I'm wearing a Con shirt right now. Okay, here, we're going to go super obscure because why not? So this is a band called the Mind Controls. They're from their self-titled record from 2006. I am pretty sure that King Con or Barbecue Mark Salton, one or the other of them, is in this band. I don't remember who, but I could probably Google it. Let's see. Mind Controls. Their self-titled record came out on Dirtnap in 2006. It is great. Yeah, so, okay, it's Mark Salton, who is Barbecue and members of a Montreal punk band called Demon's Claws. So we're going to play, let's say, Prelude to a Fight from the Mind Controls record out of 2006, just because it is something that not a lot of people have probably heard, and you've all heard the Weaker Than's before.
Fight song. That was hardcore. I was Adam. Good pick on that. I'm always down for like the King Kong and BBQ and related stuff. Those guys have put out a ton of great music, let me tell you.
They can get weird, but they do a lot of stuff.
So, first of all, Adam White, thanks for being on the podcast, even though it's a national holiday for you. So, thanks again for being here and taking time out of your dedication to Canada today and your vigilance towards Canada today.
My vigilance knows no bounds.
Greg Simpson, thanks for being here, even though you had to, what do you call it?
Mention the Wicker Dance?
Yeah, no, well, that's too. What do you call it? You had to name your own stuff. Not pitch. What do you call it? When you name
What did I pitch? I don't even realize when I'm plugging my stuff anymore. It's just
plugged
so
your
automatic.
Podcast like nine times. We were like, oh man, okay. I like the Ramones. You're like, you know who else liked the Ramones? Our podcast. Listen to
my podcast. So anyway, they weren't from the Midwest. We couldn't like the Ramones.
Greg,
we hate them.
Cheetah Chrome was though.
Yeah.
Greg Simpson, thanks for being on the Punk News podcast.
No problem.
And Tricky Ricky, thanks for being here with us. It's always a blast when we have the 12-year-old on the podcast, you know, educating a little bit about music.
Punk stay up past 7:45, yo.
Punk News Podcast. Listeners, thanks again for listening. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Send us in your Ramone tribute picks, and we'll see you next week. Except for releasing limited edition records, they're releasing limited edition cassettes, but it still takes place in record stores. It's being spearheaded in the U.S. I think it actually started as an English organization, but it's being spearheaded in the U.S. by Burger Records out in California, who released a lot of sets by bands that we like, by Off, La Sera, Red Cross, a lot of those kinds of bands. Cassette store day is September 27th, and here's what Burger Records said. Burger Records loves tapes. We've built our foundation on the forgotten format and have been preaching the merits of warm analog cassette culture for years. We're honored to be ambassadors of Cassette Store Day 2014 and the good old USA. We plan to bring some of our favorite labels to the table and invite everyone to the party and partake in the fun phenomenon of releasing top shelf music on cassette tapes and pop culture today. And actually, if you want to be a part of it, if you're a cassette label, it's quite easy. You just got to send in like $15. And I think you can actually get distribution just by sending in $15, which is actually on cassettes. That's quite a useful tool to have.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't blown up to where you're having $25 cassettes yet. Give it time. I'm not necessarily hating on this. I'm not going to hate on it, because if people are all about cassettes, fine. But I just don't understand. I was real adamant about cassettes while when the CD bubble was getting huge, also because I was younger and it was cheaper to convince my parents to buy me cassettes. But really, I mean, just the idea of always having to unwind the cassette out of my Walkman or car radio that it could get easily destroyed, it just always just seemed cheap. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't understand this like fervent appeal back to cassettes. I don't get it.
You see, I don't understand it either. And it's not like I really, even if it was a band I really liked, and I'm faced with this every once in a while, I really can't see myself buying a cassette. Like, not only do I not have anywhere to play it, but I don't even know if I would. And at that point, it's just like a weird trinket that I bought, that I'd probably rather spend that money on something else. But that said, I was at a thing the other day and there was a guy there that had like a cassette label that he was doing, and he had a table full of cassettes, and they had like, you know, they made them at home and they just had to like record each of those suckers in real time because they didn't have the right equipment for it and everything. And I was just like, you know what? Godspeed, you crazy cassette bastards. Go right ahead. I'm okay with them. I'm totally
no,
not.
No, tell us what you're really thinking. You're really thinking, you know what? No, you're really thinking that.
Well, I'm like, I'm not going to buy one, and I would not start a cassette label. But then, like, I'm also going to not, like, run with the bulls in Spain. So some people do. If that's what they want to do, hey, cool. That's all right. They could be doing worse things.
Just waiting for the 8-track revival.
I got to say, man, I like cassettes. My favorite format is the CD because it doesn't degrade and it sounds great. I like records too, though. But I like cassettes too. And here's why. And I said this a couple of times before, is I've gotten into a lot of awesome bands because cassettes are so cheap to produce. Like, cassette labels sell cassettes for like $4, $5, or $6. Like Burger Records and Baldy Longhair Records. Like, I got into the Crazy in the Brains that way. I got a cassette for $5. Awesome, awesome band. I got into Nobody that way, $5 cassette. Because honestly,
and those guys were great a couple weeks ago, by the way. That's the first time I heard them. They were great.
I mean, they're definitely a cool band. I don't really care about digital. Like, I mean, I'll get digital if it's the only option I have. But it's like, I just don't feel it has no value to me. It's like, it's on my iPod. Maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I don't. But I like having something in my hands and looking at the art and reading the credits and hearing the thing play. So I like cassettes in that it's $5 for a cassette. I mean, it's ridiculous if a cassette is like more than $5 or $6. But for me, $5 or $6 is the exact why not check it out price point if it looks cool. There's very little to have me not buy an album as if it's $5 and it looks cool. I've gotten to so many bands away. I've gotten to The Rain Cats, The Hound of Love, Mean Jeans. And I also, like with cassettes, is we'll also put like exclusives or B-sides. Like, there's a bunch of LaSera cassettes with rare demos on them. The Crazy in the Brains cassette has like 15 rare tracks on it. Off sometimes hides rare tracks on their cassettes. So for $5, I am down with the cassette, man. I wouldn't say it's the greatest format, but for $5, it's fun and not that big of a deal. And I don't understand why people hate it so much. I think people really express vitriol about it because there's a part of them that likes it. Because I mean, like, let's say somebody's juggling. I don't care about juggling. But if I saw somebody juggling, I wouldn't be like, that's stupid. I hate you. You shouldn't do that. Like, I don't care, you know? So I don't understand why people that don't listen to cassettes get so angry when they hear people listen to cassettes. I don't know. I think you're cool.
I think for me is that, like, it's pretty low on the list of, like, various things that I think you could do with $5. Like, let's say for $5, instead of a cassette, you got, like, an MP3 download card and a sandwich. Like,
you could have physical format sandwich.
You get your music and you get a sandwich, which is, hey, everyone wants a sandwich, right? So
Wait, if honestly, you're Adam, I'm not if you're getting a sandwich, does that mean someone's breaking up?
You get a sandwich, right? So it's a pretty good idea.
Adam, I'm not trying to be a dick here, but if I got a download card and a sandwich or a cassette, I would take the cassette. Because once you eat the sandwich, it's gone. But I'll always have the cassette.
But we know where this is going. Back back in the day, you'd have your cheap 7-inch, and that's how you got into, you checked out a new band. Hey, check out the 7-inch. And, it was like, $2 or $3 back in the day? You could pick up a 7-inch. But now with the cassettes coming back, initially they're going to be cheap. But I just feel like that and I'm not – again, if people want to enjoy cassettes, enjoy them. But you could just see this turning into like where people are just collecting it more for the sense that it's just limited and just to have more than to appreciate the actual format. And that alone will drive the price point is what you and other people enjoy up. And then, it's just kind of just going to blow up. I don't know. I mean, that's just how I feel, that it's just more about the limited physical product and, oh, yeah, this is cool, novelty. And it's, oh, I have all these cassettes. What do I do with them? I remember selling most of my cassettes for like 50 cents or a dollar back in like 2000. And I felt like I was the last person to sell my cassettes, amongst all my friends. So I don't know.
I think that's quite wise, Chris. I think that's a great way to close out the podcast. Adam White, do you have a tune to give us an end cap on our driving our powerful cassette and Morrissey discussion?
I have something from the cassette era for us to use here. Actually, you guys have a choice. So it was a really nice weekend. I was sitting out on the deck with a beverage, doing some work in the sun, and it was nice. And I was listening to Teenage Head, which is, if you're Canadian,
nice.
If you're Canadian, Teenage Head 1979, that self-titled record that had come out was, that was one of the punk records, especially in this area. They're from Hamilton, Ontario, which is, 30 minutes up the street from here. And I was super into it. So I'm going to play a Teenage Head song because I want to. Now, we could play a Teenage Head song from their 1979 debut, or we could play a song they recorded in 2003 with Marky Ramone when they were hanging out with Marky Ramone. Ooh. That is a re-recording of one of those. So do we want to go...
Both?
This is a really long podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we should save one. This is a tough call. I think we should take a vote. That's what I think.
Well, you first.
Me? Ooh. Ooh. Marky Ramone drums. It doesn't sing.
Marky Ramone's probably singing.
He's singing?
I think so.
I vote for Marky Ramone.
He might be. I'm not quite sure.
Let's do it.
If Marky's singing, I'm old school Teenage Head.
Hold on here. I'm not quite... I'm gonna Google this.
Adam, just play something.
I would say go with the OG since we were talking about the cassette era.
Let's do the OG. We got three for OG. We'll hit up Marky Ramone a little bit later.
All right. OG. Fine. Original. Okay, cool. So, anyways, this is off Teenage Head's self-titled record, 1979. This is Bone Rack.
Well, the ain't no girls.
And that was Teenage Head without Marco Ramone. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Adam White, thank you for firing up the hate train and keep throwing in that coal as we ran down Morrissey and Cassettes and everybody else along the track.
I wasn't trying to do that.
Mark Little, thanks for the sandwich-based pun. It went out there and it just kind of hung out there. People appreciated it without diving in.
I hope somebody out there got it.
And Chris Barrett, thank you for your wise, should I say, Yoda-ish words concerning the future of cassettes. I hope the cassette industry heeds your warnings, your prognostications, and avoids the self-implosion that we once saw with 7-inch records.
Visit my website, Drudge Report.
This is the Punk News Podcast. Thanks for listening. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Danzig. Happy birthday to you. Go!